You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom. Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you both save and improve your marriage, transform your marriage into exactly what you would like it to be. We're here each week trying to give you some advice, some feedback, some thoughts about how you can take your marriage, no matter where it is, even if it's on the edge of divorce, and turn it around and move it to something that you would treasure for the rest of your life. As many of you know, about 6 weeks ago, I lost my beloved sidekick, Sonny. Sonny was our big yellow lab, and Sonny fell to cancer over summer. And so we've been without a dog for a while. Well, I want to just kind of tell you about my last week because it was a big, big week. The first piece to cover is that now Ziggy is sitting beside me. Ziggy is a silver lab and just a puppy. He's only 7 weeks old, and it's kind of like it's reminding me of having babies in the house again. He sleeps right beside my bed right now while he's getting used to his new homes. He's only been with us a few days. So, you know, if you know that routine, he's crying in the middle of the night, needing to go outside in the middle of the night. And when I drop my hand in his box, just to let him know that somebody's there, I get a little gnawed on, but he's quickly becoming my sidekick and everybody's favorite pet in the house. He's just such an adorable little pup, which was partly brought on by the fact that my daughter was home for fall break. We're also, if you have followed my stories, we're also virtual empty nesters. We have one child at home for the rest of this year and one child at college. Our child at home, as you know, with teenagers, if you've had that experience, he's very quickly teaching us about his absence from the family as he takes on activities with friends and work and such. But our new pet is befriending everybody. And since our daughter was home for fall break, we decided it was time to go ahead and take that jump. You know, it's kind of like having kids. There's really never a good time, an easy time to do that. And it's kind of like everything that takes that kind of commitment. It's never a good or easy time. You just jump in and do it. You just kind of go for it. And so we're back to puppy mode. We haven't been in that mode for 8 years, and we had a very well-trained, very obedient lab. And now we're back to that puppy who just wants to gnaw and mess around. So we're into that phase. He seems to be pretty smart. First day with us, he learned to sit. Now, if we can just get that housebroken thing going, we'd be wonderful. Okay, so what I really want to talk about, though, was another event of the week. My son turned 18 this past week, and about 6 or 7 years ago, he started talking about the fact that he wanted to go skydiving, and he looked into it enough to know that he couldn't do that until he was 18. And so when he brought that up with me, I said, hey, you know what? I'll do that with you when you turn 18. And that was years ago. And I didn't really think about it since then until the last couple of years when he started reminding me that we were going to go skydiving when he turned 18. Well, it was time to do that. My wife made the arrangements, found somebody, talked them into doing it on a day they don't normally, and we headed off after one rainout, the day after his 18th birthday. We headed out and drove about an hour and a half away out to the middle of the country to go do a skydive. Now, I've done other things before, and you know, I think I handle adrenaline pretty well. I've done hang gliding. I've done ultralight. If you follow me, you also know I scuba dive and have done some adventure racing. And I tend not to get real anxious about these things, and this was no exception. You know, I'd kind of gotten in my head a number of years ago that this was going to happen. So this really wasn't that anxiety provoking on the front side. And as we started getting ready, you know, I did what I normally do to deal with my anxiety. I did rehearsals in my head. You know, I was kind of thinking through the process in my head as it was being told to me. I kind of talked through it. So we loaded up into this very small plane, and we left the ground and started climbing higher. Now, this very small plane had one seat, and I'll tell you, it's a somewhat sobering thought as you're lifting off when the pilot has a parachute on and the tandem instructor has a parachute on and the other two student parachuters have parachutes on, and the only one in that plane without a parachute on was me. Now, they did reassure me that if something were to happen to the plane, all they had to do was clip me onto one of the body harness clips. There are four, but only one, and we'd be rolling out of that plane, which may have been supposed to be reassuring, but to imagine myself dangling in the air by one clip wasn't helping. So there we were, loaded up in the airplane with me, without the parachute, everybody else equipped for problems. And we climbed and climbed. At 4,500 feet, the first person bailed out, and I watched him do it, and I continued to rehearse in my head what I was supposed to do. Throw my arms back, throw my legs up, throw my head back, hold on, wait till the altimeter hit 5,500 feet, and pull the cord. I kept going through that, reaching for the cord, making sure I was rehearsing in my head what needed to happen. So as we continued to climb, we got up to 10,000 feet, and the other student climbed out on the wing and held on while we got ourselves going. At 7,500 feet, the instructor had clipped me in, and we had double and triple checked what everything was clipped and everything was ready. I knew where the ripcord was. I knew what I was supposed to do. I was rehearsing it in my head. All was good, and we got to 10,000 feet. The student climbed out on the wing. Then it was my turn to begin to move, now clipped in with the instructor. So we're very closely tied together, but our turn to get out there. So I get one leg out the door. Now I'm 6'4", and this is a small plane. So it took some effort to get my second leg swung out the door. At that point, it suddenly occurred to me as I was looking out that I was about to jump out of a perfectly good plane at 10,000 feet, assuming that the guy behind me had a clue what he was doing and that we would somehow make it to the ground. Up until that point, the anxiety had not been too great. I could feel the butterflies in my stomach, but it wasn't overwhelming. I had never thought about backing out. At that moment, I was leaning out away from the plane. He was holding me by the door and by the wing, and they want to make sure that you don't hold on to something yourself and mess up the process. So my fingers were actually holding on to the straps at my shoulders. So at that point, we were dangling. I was certainly dangling. I was kind of pitched forward. He was hanging on. And as he began to count, I looked down, felt the 80 mile per hour wind buffeting me, and realized I was about to jump into space. I was about to just let go, not really even jump, but fall out of the sky for 10,000 feet, hoping that that parachute would open and hoping that the instructor behind me knew how to get me to the ground. At that point, though, I was committed. And so I remember the thought in my head, what am I doing? And then I heard behind me, 1, 2, go. And we were falling. The interesting thing for me is my moment of anxiety was the moment where there was no turning back, where it was all in. It was at that moment when I really had to make sure that I was ready to go, that I was meaning ready to jump, that there was no turning back at that point. While I was in the plane, I always knew that I could say, hey, you know what? I don't really want to do this. And they would land and we would all walk away. I also knew that once we were on the wing, I couldn't get back in that plane very easily. I was going to do this. I also knew that once I jumped, after that, it was all kind of the fallout. It was all the repercussions of that reaction. From then on, it was just simple physics and hopefully mechanics that was going to take it. And so the moment of decision was that moment when I was staring into space at 10,000 feet up, realizing that all it took was the instructor to let go of the plane. We didn't have to push off. We didn't have to do anything. He just had to let go and we would begin to fall. That's the moment when I went, oh my gracious, what am I doing? And I hear 1, 2. I brace myself, go, and we're out the door, floating through the sky. Now, if you know about gravity, we were very quickly, even though we were spread out, spread eagled, trying to create some wind resistance, we were probably doing about 120 miles per hour hurtling towards the Earth, gaining speed, actually. And so as we were doing that, the time was kind of in frozen space. I was waiting for the effect. Now, I'm talking to you now, so you know the effect. The parachute did blow out, and we did land safely. What was amazing for me was the clarity of that. After that moment of jumping, after that moment of decision, there was no turning back. In my mind, that was the moment when there was no turning back. I was fully committed, and all I was going to do was carry out the plan. Fully committed, carry out the plan. The moment when there is anxiety is until you're fully committed. When he let go, we were absolutely committed to that process of falling to the earth, of hurtling towards the earth, waiting for the parachute to simply slow us down. It's just a matter of gravity at that point and a matter of mechanics. And so as we fell, you know, we were in free fall for just a matter of seconds. It seemed like forever. It always does. When we're in that midst of that crisis moment, it always feels like it's going to take forever. And then he tapped me on my arm to show me that I was at 6,000 feet. And at 5,500 feet, I reached down, grabbed the ripcord, pulled it up, felt a small tug, and then felt a huge tug. From then on, it was just about controlling our descent, doing some spins in the air, moving from side to side, braking as we landed on our hind knees on the grass. Perfect landing. My instructor was excellent. It was a great fall. And then it was over. Now, what I want to talk about in this is that moment. There are kind of three phases to this process. The getting ready phase. I want you to kind of think about what I was doing. You know, all this anxiety that can happen in the midst of a crisis, whether we choose the crisis or the crisis comes to us. All of the thought process ahead of it. In my mind, the best way of dealing with that is to begin to build your plan. To begin to understand the process as it's going to unfold, to understand what was going on with what had been strapped to me. I had a big harness on, and each piece of it I understood. And even though it didn't really matter, I knew the weight of the harness. You know, I knew what each buckle could hold. And even though it didn't matter, I knew how they had folded the parachute. I needed some understanding of that, but not a lot, because that was just some reassurance. And so before any time we enter into a difficult time, we want to gather up as much as we can of the training. That's part of the process I try to offer in the Save the Marriage system, for instance, or in my other materials, is a platform to kind of understand what you're going to do. But that's the understanding part. Now, I realize that lots of times we all get information that we never act on. I've got on my computer a ton of courses and books, and I've got on my bedside table a ton of journals and books, all telling me all kinds of things that I could act on. I could choose to do that. Not all of them will I. And so the question for you is, as you're preparing to save your relationship, are you going through that checklist of knowing the plan that you're going to do? So you gather enough data. You don't have to have a complete data plan. I didn't need to know everything there was about parachuting. I needed enough to get started. I needed enough to get going on that journey. It was not a matter of me mastering the parachute before I ever took a jump. It wasn't a matter of me understanding all of the physics of it and all the mechanics of it, and all of the other pieces of that process that would be required if I were going to master parachuting. This was starting. What I find is a lot of times when people are in crisis, they have a hard time starting because they are so busy gathering the information, trying to master the subject before they ever involve themselves. Well, let me just reassure you, that's not a possibility. There are some things that we can understand in theory, but there are so many things that we have to understand in action, that we have to understand and unroll as we're in that process. So as we're falling, after that parachute has erupted above us and as we're kind of floating down, the instructor behind me says, okay, so let me show you how you guide the parachute. You pull down on this guy line. If you want to go left, you pull down on the left side. If you want to go right, you pull down on the right side. If you want to go really fast to the right, you pull really hard down. Now, after you do that, you pull both of them down, and that creates the brake. All the way down is full brake, but you can only do that for so long. Okay, so then I got some instruction on what to do. I could not have understood those instructions had he just told me that before we left. Now he did. He told me that, but it didn't make sense. The learning happens in the trying. And so part of the process of saving a marriage, saving a relationship, improving a marriage, improving a relationship is getting started, getting to that point when you have enough information to go. So you gather the information. You gather it all and you read and you begin to formulate what your plan's going to be. You don't have to get a PhD in marital therapy, and you don't have to become a relationship coach, and you don't have to be a researcher in this area to get started. You just have to have enough information to get started. So I had enough information gathered. He'd taught me enough, and then it was time to go up. Now, this is another piece that's important. It's sometimes helpful to have someone walk beside you when you're trying these things. It was nice to have an instructor who knew what to do in case of a problem, which is why we offer some coaching. You know, I offer some individual coaching with people. I have a team of coaches that do that. And I also have a virtual coaching program, and that virtual coaching program is designed just like that, that I'm there to answer questions for people as they go through that. And so as people are kind of thinking, you know, gosh, I got started, now I don't know what to do, the next step is often just a question. What do I do now? What do I do here? Or maybe some more teaching, which I also do in that virtual coaching program. And that's why I design it that way. So on the front end, you get the information to get started. And that information will become deeper and more meaningful as people go through the process. And then sometimes there's the need for a coach, somebody to tell you what to do next. That's the process. But there comes a crucial moment. And that crucial moment is when I'm dangling out of that plane, about to take the plunge, knowing that it's all in or not. And this is, in my mind, the pivotal moment for somebody deciding to save a marriage. Saving a marriage is all in or not. You can't say, you know, I think I'll give it a little try, and if it doesn't work out, I'll back off, and then maybe I'll try it again a little bit later. It's all in, meaning that you go, okay, I'm committing to this, and I'm jumping. I'm going for it. I'm not going to let my emotions, I'm not going to let my frustrations, and I'm not going to let my resentments get in my way. I'm in. I'm jumping. And at that moment, you make a shift from the information that you've gathered that's enough to understand to making the commitment to acting. And from there on, it's a matter of fine-tuning the process. So if you haven't made that commitment to jump, or if you find yourself half making the commitment to jump, you know, where you kind of edge towards it and you try to make a connection, and when things don't go well, you're back out. What I know is it's that moment of commitment that you have to know you're all in. There was no way for me to half jump. There was no way for me to half try parachuting. I was either going to jump, or I was going to come back down and land. And so the question is, when do you decide that you're all in? That you are all in and you're headed for saving your marriage because you're committed to it. Now, that doesn't mean you're 100% sure that you're going to be able to do it, but you're 100% committed to working on that process. Sometimes I get emails from people, and they'll often say, hey, you know, here's the deal. If I just knew I could save the relationship, I would get started. And to me, that's like a lot of things in life. You know, if you walk up to Steve Jobs and, you know, ask him, did you know that Apple was going to succeed when you started it? Or did you just start anyway? Ask any of the people who have started in any venture, and they're often saying, you know, I did all I could to make sure it would succeed, but I didn't know on the front side. You can't know on the front side. You can't know what's going to happen. And it's like that in so many areas of life. You don't know how it's going to unfold. You don't say, you know, I think I'll take this entry-level job with your company if you can guarantee me that one day I'll be president. That may be your aspiration, but that's not the question you ask. You don't say, you know, I'll go ahead and try this treatment for this disease if you can tell me 100% that I'm going to be cured on the backside, because they can't. But you take a chance. You take a risk because the outcome is what's outweighing the cost. The outcome is what's outweighing the risk that you might feel. And so that's the question, is are you ready to take that leap all in? You may be listening to this and you haven't even decided if you're going to save the relationship. And I would say that's the all-in moment. You may have decided that you're going to save the relationship, but you keep kind of backing away. You keep kind of doing a little dance to and back and towards and back and towards. And all that does is it creates confusion for a spouse. the other person is getting very confused on why it is that at one moment you seem to be ready to save the relationship, and the next moment you pull away. And so part of this process is saying, it doesn't matter if it scares me. I am all in. I'm all in. Now, if you're all in and you haven't grabbed my system, let me invite you to do that, because that's the part where you gather the information and then you jump. And if, as you're falling, you realize you need somebody to help you understand a little bit more, just give me an email, lee@savethemarriage.com, and I can tell you about the virtual coaching program that can get your questions answered. So it's kind of like that person over my shoulder saying, pull hard to the right, watch what happens. Pull hard to the left, watch what happens. Pull down all the way, watch what happens. Now let's fine tune that. Now let's land. Let's get ready for that landing. That's what a coach does for you. So now the moment is to say, are you all in? That's the question of the day. All the stuff before it, all the information before it, and all the help after, that's easy. But the question you have to ask yourself is, am I all in? Let me invite you to count 1, 2, go.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.